What takes, what part of the tree takes in the carbon dioxide? Anybody remember? Huh? The leaves do. So they take it in through the leaves. And then with sunlight, photosynthesis happens, and that carbon dioxide gets turned into delicious oxygen and sugar. So anybody here had maple syrup before? Of course, it's delicious. And that is carbon dioxide that's been taken into the leaf and turned into a sugar that runs from the leaves down into the roots. Okay. So she goes and has lunch after she injects all those poor paper birches with, not poor, they were fine, birches with radioactive carbon dioxide. Then she goes to lunch. Comes back in an hour or so, removes the plastic bags from all the trees. Then she takes her Geiger counter. Anybody know what a Geiger counter is? Yeah, it measures radioactive material. Yeah, it counts Geigers. That's brilliant. Yep. And she runs the Geiger counter next to the paper birch trees. And what do you think she heard? That's what these machines make. That tells her that there is radioactive carbon in the paper birch trees. Now, we would expect this because where did the radioactive carbon get injected next to? The paper birch trees. They all got radioactive carbon injected into their air. Guess what? They took it into their leaves. They absorbed it. Ah, then the moment, the magic. She goes to, what were you again? The Douglas fir trees. She goes to the Douglas fir trees. She takes her Geiger counter. She runs it next to them. And what do you think she hears? That's right. Okay. Now, what does that mean? Somehow, carbon dioxide made it from the paper birch trees to the Douglas fir trees, even though there was no air to exchange between them. And what she discovers, you can put the next slide up, Zach, is that between Mel and Kevin, between the paper birch and the Douglas fir, there is an exchange of radioactive carbon underground. Their roots are connected by fungal systems, fungus, little teeny tiny tubes of fungus connect the roots of the paper birch and the Douglas fir trees. All right. Thank you, trees. You can have a seat. Thank you so much. Western Cedar, we're going to come back to you. Don't worry. Don't worry. Your story's not quite done. All right. So the trees are sending sugar back and forth. They're sharing food with each other, which totally surprised and blew away the scientists. They did not expect this at all for any reason. They also learned as they continued to expand the experiments that when paper birch had an insect infestation, it would send a message through its roots, through the fungal system to the roots of other trees, warning them that insects were eating it and they should beef up their defenses. Or if there was a drought, the trees talked to each other. And again, they would share food. If this tree didn't have enough, it would send a signal through this root system and let other trees know that it needed help. And they would respond. So for thousands of years, we've looked at trees and just imagined that tree's a tree and that tree's a tree. And they're just all single, solitary, isolated trees, just organisms fighting for every bit of sun and nutrients that it can get its roots on. They were competitors, is what we believed. Survival of the fittest, right? Science is showing us that trees are not competitors, at least not always. In fact, quite often they are cooperators and collaborators. Communities, in fact, linked together in a communicative, generous, self-giving network, which I think is fascinating, in part because it reminds me of your life and my life. We live in a culture that often thinks a person is just that, a single, solitary individual who fights for every bit of control or money or power that it can get its hands on. In fact, isn't it common to believe in our world that every human has to fend for itself, that we're just a bunch of competitors. And that's maybe especially true in this country, where the rugged pull yourself up by your bootstraps, take what you can get individual is held up as the ideal. So this is the world that we live in. And then we run into a pandemic, a virus that separates and isolates, and perhaps in a way few other things could. This pandemic awakens us to what had been true all along. We are not rugged, self-sufficient, individualistic competitors. God has made us to be something quite different. So if you've got a Bible, you can turn to 1 Corinthians 12. Quite well-known passage, especially when it comes to what we are talking about today. And here's verses 12 and then 19 through 21. The human body has many parts, but the many parts make up one whole body. So it is with the body of Christ. How strange a body would be if it had only one part. Yes, there are many parts, but only one body. The eye can never say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head can't say to the feet, I don't need you. In God's kingdom, one person cannot say to another person, I don't need you. To say that is to fundamentally misunderstand what God is creating. This passage and many others make it clear that God is not creating a bunch of separated, independent people. That's not God's goal. God's goal is a deeply woven, astoundingly connected, fundamentally interdependent body, where every part needs the other. This week I was talking with someone who verbalized something I've felt many times myself. They said, I like to give much more than I like to receive. Anybody know? Anybody felt that same thing? I like to give. I'm not so good at receiving help. And I get that. Because to receive something is to admit that you need someone. That my life on its own individually is not enough. And that is an assault on my pride. And so my ego resists it. It says, I don't need help and I don't need you. I mean, we never say it quite like that, but we think it and we feel it. But in those moments that I can think of, and sadly they are not as many as they should be, but when I am able to say, I do need you, yes, please help me, that is when life is lived in all of its abundance. So if you want to learn more about these trees, I'd invite you to pick up a book titled The Hidden Life of Trees, The Hidden Life of Trees. It's written by Peter Wohlleben, I think that's how you pronounce it, The Hidden Life of Trees. It is a fascinating read. It's an easy read. It's a short little book highlighting a number of things about trees that we are now just learning, nearly all of which were there, of course, not nearly, all of them were there all along. We just didn't know it. And in one of the first chapters, he tells us about a study of beech trees in a forest in Europe. And as you would expect, some of the beech trees were old and large, some young and small. Some were in great soil and had plenty of sun. Others were in terrible soil and barely any sun. Well, the scientists thought it'd be fun, as scientists do, to measure the amount of photosynthesis happening in each tree. And what you would expect is that the big trees in good soil who are getting lots of sun would have a really high rate of photosynthesis. They would be making lots of sugar. But those trees that were small or in poor soil or that had little sun, they would have a really low rate of photosynthesis. And so now I'm quoting him. And so you would expect every tree to be photosynthesizing at a different rate. And that's what makes the research results so astounding. The rate of photosynthesis is the same for all the trees. The trees, it seems, are equalizing differences between the strong and weak by exchanging sugar through their roots and fungal systems. When trees grow together, nutrients and water can be optimally divided among them so that each tree can grow into the best tree it can be. Their well-being depends on their community. Isn't that fascinating? Listen to verse 25 and 26 of 1 Corinthians 12. And this is from the Message translation. The way God designed our bodies is a model for understanding our lives together as a church. Every part dependent on every other part. The parts we mention and the parts we don't. The parts we see and the parts we don't. If one part hurts, every other part is involved in the hurt and in the healing. If one part flourishes, every other part enters into the exuberance. Every part dependent on every other part. When a tree in a birch forest is in need, others give what they have. When one tree isn't getting enough sun, others shuttle over some food. When one is under attack from bugs, others respond. The same is to be true in the body of Christ. Let me just say it again. God is not interested in creating a rugged, self-sufficient collection of individuals. In fact, that sort of person, I think you could argue, doesn't actually exist in God's kingdom. We may think it does. We may fall into the temptation of seeing ourselves in competition with everyone else. But in truth, you are already connected to something much greater than your individual self. You are part of a body, a network, a family where you are needed and you need others, where every part is dependent on every other part. The question is, will we willingly and fully enter into this interconnected life? Remember the Western Cedar? Ruby, that's you. Yeah, we had a third tree. So the firs and the birches are talking to each other and sharing carbon and warning each other. The Western Cedars are growing right there as well, along and in and among these other two trees. But the Western Cedars, for some reason, do not communicate with other trees. They are on their own. Scientists aren't exactly sure why. Maybe it's not compatible with the fungal networks. Maybe Western Cedars are just plain stubborn. No one knows. No one knows. Thank you, Western Cedar. We know you are not stubborn. You can have a seat. But I do think it's a helpful metaphor for us. Just like the Western Cedar, we can choose disconnection. We can choose competition and independence. That can be our path. But it is not how we are meant to live. And I know that deep in your bones, you know that. I was reminded of this Friday night when I had the unbelievable joy of officiating Noah Overman's wedding. Noah and Annalise got married, small little wedding from what was going to be a pretty big one. You know, they had to really whittle down the list. It was just immediate family and friends. But, you know, I've done dozens and dozens of weddings now, and I'm always struck at how joyful they are. I mean, of course they are, we would say. They're a wedding, for goodness sake. But I've been asking myself for some time now, why? Why are they so joyful? Okay, there's potentially good food. That makes me happy too. Okay, all right. I mean, it's beautiful. Beauty certainly inspires joy. But I think it has something to do with the interdependence that is being pledged by these two people. I think that commitment is inspiring to us. I think we know that that's the way that it's supposed to be, and not just between two spouses. I mean, that interdependence is meant to be lived in all sorts of relationships to varying degrees, and certainly marriages are unique in many ways. But I think the joy is there because we are seeing humanity trying to live its best and intended purpose. Could be wrong. That's my hunch. But I think, again, you and I know deep in our bones that an independent life is not how we are to live. And yet, it's hard to be interdependent. It's a lot easier to just go it alone. Or maybe we want to be interdependent, but we're finding that it's hard for other people. Other people are not seemingly willing to enter into relationship with us. It goes both ways. But this is who we are meant to be. Birch and fir trees connected, talking to each other, sharing food, warning each other when there's a need, responding when someone needs help. And so what I want to do today to end is give us some time, about 10 minutes probably, to break into some groups and have some conversation. So if you're on the lawn, we'll pair up squares. If you're on Zoom, we're going to split you into breakout rooms of just two or three households. We're going to keep it small so that everybody can have the chance to participate. Of course, as you know, if you don't want to do this, you don't have to join. You can just, you know, stay where you're at. But I'm going to pose some questions to you. And Zach, if you would just flip through these questions real quick so that people can see them and I can say a few words about them. And then maybe we can put them in the chat window. And so when people get into their breakout rooms, they can still have access to them. So the first question you're going to do, and this is going to be a quick one, where are you seeing independence, a rugged individualism, competition? Where are you seeing that in our world right now? Just quickly, like, brainstorm. And the flip side, where are you witnessing interdependence? Where are you seeing people connected, acting and living together? So it's going to be like real quick, 2 minutes. Bam, 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 bam. Oh, I noticed that. Oh, I saw that. Oh, I read that article. Oh, there's this person in my life. Da, 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 da. Next question will be another brainstorming one. Where in your spheres of influence or in the world at large have you seen people in need of support and care? So who in your life personally do you know? Or maybe you don't know personally, but out there in the world, do you know of people in need of care and support? And what are those needs? So that's what you're going to write. Someone's going to need to, like, be a scribe, and you're just going to, again, this is brainstorming, not elaborating, just bam, 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 bam. This is what I'm seeing in the world. And then the final question, you're going to take one or two of those things from your list, and you're going to ask yourselves this. What could you do to respond, and what could we do? So if food shortages for the homeless is a need that you've noticed, you would then ask yourselves, if you picked that from your list, what could I do, Chris DeBlay? What could we do, the people that I'm talking to today on Zoom or on the lawn? What could the church do, the branch? You're going to try and think about what a response might be. And you're going to throw those into the chat window. So 10:40, we're going to end this at 10:50. So you have time. And what we'll do is post these questions in the chat window and we will post them. We'll broadcast them as well. So if you're on the Lawn Para, if you're on Zoom, sit tight. We're going to throw you into some breakout rooms and let's have some conversation about this.